Come on, let's get going now.
From KMOX Sports.
We're primed and ready.
All day, baby.
Man, let's go.
This is the Graybar Sports Open Live. Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Here we go. Welcome in. It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name's Matt Pauly. Continuing this Cardinals conversation, if you've been with us, we've been doing Redbird Rush Hour, lots of things to get into. We will continue this conversation about what's going on with this team, both from a negative standpoint with what we just saw in Chicago, where they just got their you-know-what handed to them in two of the three games. Now, the middle game when they won, man, that was awesome. That was exciting. A lot of times I hate it when really cool moments get overshadowed by bad things. You'll have an amazing comeback in a game, like just out of control, crazy, the way you come back in a game, and then you lose an extra innings. It's like, that comeback, it doesn't matter. It's not memorable now because you didn't win the game. You know, that second game of the series against the Cubs was awesome. The Joel Pozo home run, the way he was able to show off afterwards. But it happened in a series where the Cardinals just got completely outplayed in two of the three games, being outscored 22-3, 22 runs given up over two of those three games. Just not good enough, and it creates questions about what's going to happen with starting pitching. I don't think Eric Fetty makes his next start. I'm curious what's going to happen with Miles Michaelis here moving forward. Neither of these guys have been especially good for a while now. And, you know, Michaelis will pepper in the okay start every once in a while, and I think that in some ways is protecting him, whereas the Fetty thing, it was three straight non-competitive appearances for him. And I've talked a lot. If you listen to me very often, you know my rule of thumb very often is three straight really bad performances from a starting pitcher. That's when I'm starting to pull the plug and look for changes. Just the idea being one bad start, not a huge deal, not a red flag. Second start, that's where the red flag goes up. Third one is where it's like, okay, you got to make a change now. So Fetty got to that yesterday. Dictionary definition, I guess Michaelis is not at that point yet. But it also feels like if you're going to make a change here with Fetty, and I'm 99.9% sure that Eric Fetty's not making the next start the next time his spot comes up in the rotation, I would be shocked if Michael McGreevy doesn't get here and get here to stay. Just based off what Oliver Marmol said in his post-game conversation yesterday, where he said, basically, you know, to paraphrase him, you can't just keep doing this over and over. You got to find something different. The fact that yesterday morning with Tom Ackerman on Sports on a Sunday morning, John Mozeliak said that Michael McGreevy was lurking. That was the word he used, lurking, getting closer, obviously. I don't think Eric Fetty's in there. But in many ways, where this team has, I wouldn't say they have fallen out of the division race, but right now they've got some work to do because 6.5 games isn't nothing. Can you make 6.5 games up between now and the end of the season? Yeah, you can if you start playing really good baseball. And if the Cubs fall off a little bit, is there a possibility? Sure. But right now, it feels like the more legitimate possibility is this team finding a way via the wild card, where they're just one game out of a playoff spot right now. As we're a week out from the All-Star break, and as we're just a few weeks out from the trade deadline, it's shifted a little bit to what's the best possible configuration to get as many wins right now, as opposed to the preserving pitching depth and all those other things, which I think are important. Like you hear me say that, and it sounds like I'm being dismissive. I'm not being dismissive. That's a really important part of surviving 162 games, that being able to put yourself in position to survive bad things happening. And the Cardinals, to their credit, when it comes to starting pitching, they have done that. But you're at an intersection right now. And which way are you going to turn? Are you going to be able to plow forward? Where are you going to go? What are you going to do? And making a change in the rotation, where right now 40% of your rotation has been giving you more uncompetitive starts than anything else. It's to me, and I think to a lot of people, it feels like it's time to make a change. Is there a scenario where they take Fetty out of the rotation and they give Michaelis another start to see? That's a possibility. I won't love it, but I'm not going to be up in arms about it. But there's going to be some changes happening here. And you have the other kind of sidebar, not sidebar, but the other sort of thing that's hanging out there is the fact that you do have the All-Star break coming up. How you want to, is that going to impact any type of decisions that go on with bringing guys up, so on and so forth? AAA is basically, takes the All-Star break as well, so it doesn't have the same impact as maybe it did in previous years, but that's just another thing out there that could play into this as well. If you want to wait until after the All-Star break to bring somebody up just to kind of make it a clean start, so it's not a little bit of a herky-jerky start to somebody's full, like I'm saying somebody's, I'm talking about Michael McGreevy, obviously. If you don't want to have a herky-jerky start to Michael McGreevy's full-time entrance into the rotation where you would want to bring him in after the All-Star break, I think maybe that was something that was in the back of their heads at one point in time. It's probably not in the back of their heads anymore. After what just happened in Chicago, to me, that was startling enough that it's worth a decision to be made. And I am very curious what it's going to look like tomorrow. What is it going to look like tomorrow when we get to Busch Stadium, where there are teams out there, there are situations with bad moments and seasons for teams where you go through that, and sometimes it's right to just kind of stay the course. And for example, the Cardinals earlier this year, at one point this year, the bullpen was horrendous. It was terrible. And they made some small changes. They sent Ryan Fernandez back to AAA. They did things like that. But for the most part, they kind of stayed the course, and it came back around, and it became a strength, and it's kind of ebbed and flowed since then. But that was the right decision. The Cardinals made the right decision on the way they were going to handle their bullpen when it was really, really bad earlier this season. So there are times to just kind of stick with something, and that's something I preach all the time, because I think the challenge of making it through a 162-game season is a real challenge, and you have to find the way to manage your roster, manage your resources, even the way you manage games. At times you're doing it to make it through the 162, but there's also obvious and clear times to make changes, and I am curious to what... I would be shocked if there are zero roster moves before tomorrow's game. My question would be, how many roster moves are going to be made, and what is it going to look like? We got a lot of guests on the program today. Bernie Miklas, he's back with us in about 5 minutes. We'll talk through a bunch of stuff with him. Benjamin Hockman, Post-Dispatch columnist. He had a really cool column going into the first draft pick ever for the Cardinals. We'll talk about that. We'll get his take on the Cardinals as well. And then coming up next hour, because the Cardinals are going to be matched up against the Washington Nationals for a few games. A lot going on with the Nationals, their manager, their president of baseball operations, both being let go. Ryan Clary, who's part of the team over at 106.7 The Fan, our sister station in our nation's capital, and also he's also the host of the Locked On Nationals podcast. Ryan's going to join us coming up next hour. We'll be able to take your phone calls, your text messages, your tweets, all of that coming up later on. I'm sure there's a lot of people who want to get a lot of stuff off of their chest after watching the Cardinals against the Cubs this weekend, and we will certainly open up the phone lines for you. That's all coming up. Bernie Miklas next here on Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Total Information AM, weekdays 5 to 9 on the voice of St. Louis, 104.1 FM, KMOX.
It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. Welcome back into the program. We were just with Bernie for the last hour or so for the Redbird Rush Hour, which was great, but we get a little bit more of his time. He is Bernie Miklas. He is brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling. Bernie, I hope you enjoyed the 20 minutes away from me. It's good to have you back on.
Well, I love working with you. And by the way, you crack me up when we're doing Redbird Rush Hour in particular, because you always go, this is a term of endearment, you always go bananas. like when you're just like disgusted with something and you're like, I need to say this, and you just let it rip. And if people, I know people that probably, we have people watching that show live, I get it, but I wish everyone could see the expressions on your face. You're just like utter disdain for certain things.
I'm passionate. So, I'm passionate. I know. Yeah.
I'm not making fun of you. I love it, man. Are you kidding? Coming for me? You know, Mr. Holler about everything guy. Yeah, I like that. So, but you got passion, that's for sure.
I appreciate that. I was reading your Redbird review today over at STLSportsCentral.com, and you talked a lot about the offense, and we spent a fair amount of time on both offense and pitching in the Redbird Rush Hour. But I was thinking about this. The Cardinals have not had a consistent offensive group in a while. And I don't know if it's just the simple fact of they haven't had the players. They haven't had superstar offensive players. And you look at the teams that are good offensively, they've got really good, consistent, high level players, and the Cardinals haven't had that. But I do wonder to myself, and I wondered it more as I looked through a lot of the numbers that you presented, is there anything more beyond just having better players that's going to help this Cardinals team be a more consistent offensive club?
Well, that's a great question. I would say it's the predominant factor, I think, more than anything. And to use the baseball slang, when you say, well, what's wrong with the Cardinals offense? You get the answer. They need more dudes. Dudes as in like big, high impact offensive players. Like if you look at the Cubs, and I had a note on this, and we saw the Cubs a lot, so this is a good example. You contrast them with the Cardinals. Now, Ivan Herrera could slug with anybody. He could be in anyone's lineup, but he's not here right now. So Brendan Donovan is the Cardinals' best offensive player. And if you go by OPS plus, he's 24% above league average offensively. The Cubs have five regulars that are well above Donovan in OPS plus. That would be Michael Busch, Kyle Tucker, Suzuki, PCA, and Carson Kelly. So no wonder the Cubs can do what they do or what they do so often. Yeah, it's not always going to be as easy when you're not facing Miles Michaelis, but they have dudes up and down that lineup. And the only time, in recent years that we can, I think you and I and just about anybody else could recall was, the 2022 team. It was a special year because you got, Goldie was the MVP of the league. Arenado finished third. There was a case for him to actually win the MVP. He had a great year. Goldie had a great year. Pujols had an amazing, basically from the start of July to the end of the season. They had so many things clicking. They had so many, some of their young guys came up and did a heck of a job, like Donovan and Nootbaar. I mean, they had dudes in 2022, mm-hmm. but before that, maybe the second half in 2021 when their three outfielders, O'Neill, Carlson, and Bader, they were outstanding, but that's only 3 months of baseball, So the Cardinals have not had enough, quote, dudes. And when J.J. Weatherholt, finally makes it here, he'll certainly give them a chance to have a dude in that lineup, high impact. And they already have one in Ivan Herrera. And I also know that, he's got a long way to go in his career, but he's made it look easy offensively so far.
It's a good point about the Cubs. And I think it's also, I'm not trying to shift this towards everything is peachy and rosy, because obviously it's not. But you think about a couple guys in the Cubs. If you removed whoever's in right field, whether it's Burleson or Walker, and you put Kyle Tucker, if you trade out one of those guys and all of a sudden you have a Seiya Suzuki in the lineup, if you have those two guys in the Cardinals lineup, there's not a lot of difference from that point forward. So the point I'm trying to make is, as far as the Cardinals may seem, Bernie, from being like that real good, consistent offense, in many ways, when you got nine guys in the lineup, if you could change out a guy or two, that can be a big difference.
Yeah, I mean, all of a sudden you had two high-impact bats to Herrera and Donovan being a really good offensive player. You had two bats that, whether they come up through your system or you get them through other means, and I think your offense looks a lot different. And the thing about having dudes in your lineup, high-impact hitters, it makes it easier for – I use Suzuki as a great example. Like, Suzuki doesn't have to be the guy. He doesn't have to be the hero. He can fit into that lineup comfortably without feeling stressed out. It's like, I got to hit the home runs. I got to do this. He's surrounded by so much talent, it just makes it really easier for him to put up big numbers because he doesn't feel – the constant stress of feeling like it's all up to him or whatever. So the dudes play off each other, and the more of them you have, the easier it is for some of your other players. Because They're no one's looking to them to be the heroes, and they can fit in on their own time, working on their own game. And, you know, people aren't going to be screaming if they're struggling for, you know, 3 or 4 weeks, because everyone else, all the dudes in the lineup are performing at a high level. And I tell you another thing, Matt, real quick. It's funny because I took my 20 minutes or whatever it was before I joined you, because I want to start writing something tomorrow about, okay, how do they fix this offense? And there's a couple things really quick. Their performance at leadoff has really deteriorated. It's I won't go into the numbers, but it has really deteriorated, and that's got to change. I don't know what the solution is. There's a couple different options. The other thing, and I'm telling people what they already know, the Cardinals, especially in starting in June and into July, are just handcuffed by left-handed starting pitchers. I mean, they're really, really, really bad, right? Mm-hmm. And the other thing is speed. I mean, the Cardinals among National League teams are 13th in stolen bases, and they're mediocre in terms of their success rate. And they've also had too many guys thrown out on the bases. So the running game is not what I would like to see it be, but I also know they're not built to steal bases, so I don't want to see them run into outs either. But they're running into a lot of outs on the bases. And of course, one thing that would improve the offense is getting Herrera back, but also the guys that they have are capable of hitting. You know, they can't go missing for 2 weeks. I mean, they've got to be more consistent.
We always knew there was the scary thing about this team, though, is when a bunch of guys go into a slump at the exact same time. And I remember Oliver Marmol talking about this in spring, saying, look, this is a young group. There's going to be times where guys go into slumps. It just seems like, Bernie, everybody slumps or everybody excels at the exact same time.
It really does. It really does. I mean, listen, the Cardinals are going to lose games to the Cubs, and you know they're in the, and listen, the Pirates have been, yeah, I know they were lousy in Seattle, but the Pirates have been an improved team. So when you go into a series and you're going to face Skeens and you're going to face Mitch Keller, I mean, it's not easy to win either one of those matchups. But I tell you what, man, you know they've been, we're talking about the Cubs and the Pirates, just the last seven games, or the last seven losses, I should say, against those two teams. I mean, they've been shut out six times in the seven losses. I mean, there's no justification for being that bad. But to your point, it's a bunch of guys going ice cold at the same time.
Last thing for you, and this kind of bugged me the last day, because we found out that the Nationals move on from their manager and from their GM. And a lot of people who don't like Oliver Marmol and John Mozeliak jumped out and said, why don't the Cardinals do that? And just, it's... Tim, this year the Cardinals have 48 wins. The Nationals have 37 wins. Last year, the Cardinals had a winning season. They had 83 wins. The Nationals last year had 71 wins. There's a disconnect somewhere with people who dislike those two individuals so much that they take any opportunity to try to compare what is just a horribly wretched situation in Washington to a situation in St. Louis that right now isn't great, but has a team a game out of a playoff spot.
Yeah, what I don't like about whatever criticism. Listen, Mozeliak is a different story because it's just he's been around too long. He's on the way out. He's going to be unpopular, and that's all there is to it. I respect people that can give me educated, enlightened, legitimate criticism of Ollie Marmol and make the case. But just thrashing around and like slobbering around and spitting all over X, there's no reason for me to take those people seriously. Ollie Marmol, based on the run differential so far, the Cardinals are actually two games better than they should be in terms of their record. And I will remind people, like I always do, Ollie Marmol will finish this season, his fourth season as the Cardinals manager, with a better winning percentage than Tony La Russa had after his first four seasons of the Cardinals as a Cardinals manager. And Tony La Russa came into the job with a lot more experience and a lot more success in his background. Marmol was a rookie, basically. So how do the haters reconcile that? Well, with me, they've tried to reconcile it, and they're easy to just swat away because they don't base anything on facts. It's like, well, La Russa inherited a terrible situation. No, he didn't. Bill DeWitt and his partners bought the team. Jacquetty was making trades left and right. They went to Tony before 96. They said, what do you want? What do you need? He put together a checklist. They went out and signed or traded for so many guys. That team had a lot of talent in 96. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to hear this crap about how, well, he inherited an awful situation. What, and you think Marmol inherited a great situation? They're about after the Pujols, after the Pujols years, you know, ownership's, you know, starts reducing payroll. The farm system went bad. The player development system went bad. It got so bad they were behind in technology, facilities, tools. They don't know how to develop prospects. What the heck did Ollie Marmol have anything to do with that? The payroll going down and the farm system and the development system getting so bad that they're spending $15, $20 million this year to make it right and bringing in all these new people to do it. Oh, but that's Ollie Marmol's fault. Okay, whatever you say, champ.
That's Bernie Miklas. Great stuff. Bernie, you're brought to us by Saliga Heating and Cooling. As you cool down a little bit here, can you tell us about our friends at Saliga?
I'm telling you, man, you have a bad impact on me. You got a bad influence on me.
Manager Ollie Marmol joins the Gas House Gang every Tuesday at noon. Sponsored by Siteman Cancer Center on the Voice of the Cardinals, 104.1 FM, KMOX.
It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. We appreciate you taking some time with us. We will give you an opportunity to call in, chime in on what happened to the Cardinals over the weekend. But right now, want to welcome on to the program. He is a friend. He is a columnist with the Post-Dispatch and STL Today. He is Benjamin Hockman. Ben, always appreciate you taking some time with us. How are you?
I'm doing real well. How are you, Matt?
I am good. I'm glad to be talking to you a little bit. I wanted to have you on for a couple reasons. First off, you wrote a piece going into the Cardinals' first ever draft pick going back to the summer of 1965. I didn't. I learned as I read your story, which is awesome. But Joe DeFabio, a guy who did not get to the big leagues despite being that first pick. What motivated you to kind of go back into the history books and learn a little bit about Joe DeFabio?
Well, I mean, for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, obviously I write a lot of columns like the great Bernie Miklas did, who you just had on, where I'm sharing my opinion about the Cardinals, the current team, but I also love to tell stories about Cardinal history. And I guess it was last year I had heard about the first ever draft, 1965. So I marked it on my calendar. A year from now, 2025, it'll be the 60th anniversary. And sure enough, I did the research and found Joe DeFabio to be a fascinating fellow.
And one of the connections to the current team is he was from Cranford, New Jersey. And sure enough, he went to Gordon Graceffo is a product of the same place, the same high school. So there is a current connection to DeFabio to basically the current Cardinals.
I couldn't believe it. It's not like DeFabio's from like Philadelphia. There's another guy from Philadelphia in the Cardinals. No, this is a small town, Cranford, New Jersey, and that's where Joe DeFabio grew up. And he was a high school phenom who went on to pitch at Delta State, which is in Mississippi, and his ERA, his final year there, was 0.55. It basically didn't have an ERA.
And this high school, Hubie Brown at one point was there, a guy by the name of Raleigh Massimino, I hope I'm saying that correctly, who led Villanova. I mean, they're punching above their weight here for the level of talent that they're producing there in Cranford, New Jersey.
Yeah, how funny is it? Raleigh Massimino and Hubie Brown were both baseball coaches of Joe DeFabio, the Cardinals' first ever draft pick in the 1965 draft. And they, of course, both go on to be legendary basketball coaches.
I don't want to take away too much. I encourage everybody to read this at STL Today. Can you take me through just, I think sometimes pulling back the curtain for me is just as much as fun as anything else. What does it look like for you when you start going through the research process on something like this? Because there's a lot of information in here. I'm sure it took some time to get everything.
Yeah, well, whenever I speak to students, I always say become an instant expert on your topic. So I tried my hardest to become an instant expert on all things Joe DeFabio. And I have access to newspapers.com, so I was reading old articles from the New Jersey papers and, of course, the St. Louis papers. And I reached out to his family. The Facebook these days, you can find almost anybody. So I found his nephew and chatted with him. And that was a fun thing, too. His nephew is a card collector and actually runs an online store, and he didn't know about Gordon Graceffo, who went to the same high school as Joe DeFabio, and he realized that he had a Gordon Graceffo autographed rookie card right there on the desk in front of him. So, yeah, you become an instant expert, and I love weaving in Cardinals history as much as I can. How cool is this? Boo Ferris was the coach at Delta State, if you recognize that name. He was the starting pitcher in Game 7 for the Boston Red Sox in 1946. St. Louis, of course, won that game thanks to Enos Slaughter's Mad Dash.
I have to think, you know, for a lot of people who you've got somebody from the history of your family and you almost feel like their legacy goes away as time goes on. I got to think when in a situation like this and other times you talk with people, there's almost got to be a relief or just a gratefulness from some of these family members that somebody they care about so much or a story from their family they care about so much gets brought back up.
Yeah, it's a sweet way of putting it, man. And yeah, no question about it. And no, Joe DeFabio, he only made AAA, never made the Cardinals themselves, but he's a trivia answer. He's part of Cardinals history and be able to tell his story and kind of excite his family members. Yeah, I mean, last year, writing about Carl Warwick, the Cardinal who had, I believe, four pinch hits in the first four games of the 1964 World Series, and talking to his family, and Carl passed away this year, and being able to get that story, you know, have him be excited about, his family excited about, before he left us was, you know, his honor to do that.
What a bummer he didn't make it with that name, Joe DeFabio. That's a great name. Like, nobody would have forgotten about Joe DeFabio.
Right. And then for years later, they're asking, where have you gone, Joe DeFabio?
Benjamin Hockman from the Post-Dispatch continuing to join us. While we have you, let's talk for a couple moments before we let you go about what happened over the weekend. Cardinals lose 2 out of 3, but that doesn't even start to tell the story because in the two losses, they give up 22 runs and everything feels terrible right now for the Cardinals, despite the fact that they're just one game out of a playoff spot. What do you make of not just this series, but really the last week and a half, where they're not scoring any runs, they're not getting good pitching, especially from Michaelis and Fetty? It just, this team has obviously taken a bit of a left turn over the last week or so.
Yeah, I wrote for tomorrow's paper that this past road trip for fans felt like not just riding a roller coaster, but do you remember that one summer when they made the Screaming Eagle go backwards at Six Flags? That was the roller coaster ride Cardinals fans went on the past 6 days. A lot to be frustrated about, but Fetty will inevitably be replaced in the rotation, short term at least, by Michael McGreevy. And look, I'll give you some optimism. Those listening, here's a little optimism for you. The Cardinals have six series before the trade deadline, and like you mentioned, they're just one game out of the wild card spot, 6.5 in the division. Well, five of the six teams they play are under 500, so there you go. There's some optimism right there.
Yeah, look, I think this team is going to stay in contention. I don't know if they're a playoff team. I don't know if they stay in divisional contention. I think they're going to play games in September that matter, but they're in this really weird spot right now where they're still in it, so you have to try to win, but at the same time, it's not a year that was designed to win, and much like many of their problems over the last few years, they're in this very weird middle area, and I don't know if fans even completely know how to deal with it.
Yeah, the one good thing you could say is that there's a redundancy at the catcher position in the system. They have a lot of good young catchers. So if they were to trade one of those guys for a right-handed bat or what have you, it wouldn't be the end of the world. So that, there's some optimism. But yeah, I mean, we watched the game last night on the ESPN broadcast, and they spent numerous innings talking about kind of this weird spot the Cardinals are in. But I guess you can flip it and say, look, they could be in the weird spot and under 500. Yeah. Instead, they're in the weird spot and they're still in the mix. And hey, hats off to Brendan Donovan. He's got OPS right around 800, and he made the All-Star team. He's my daughter Olson's favorite player, so that was an exciting moment in our household.
Okay, that's good. I don't know if my daughter has my oldest daughter has a favorite. I'll tell you this: my oldest daughter every day says, "Did the Cardinals win or lose yesterday?" And if they won, she's happy. And if they lost, she just stomps away in anger.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. That maybe, I mean, I'm not advocating lying all the time, but maybe just to save the day, just tell her they're on a big winning streak.
I don't know. She's fine. She's sick. She's fine 2 minutes later.
Okay. Oh, good. All right. Good.
So that's all right. Benjamin, we encourage everybody. This is a really fun piece that you put together on the first ever Cardinals draft pick, Joe DeFabio. I learned a lot reading this. I think a lot of people will learn a lot reading it. So go to stltoday.com and read it. Thanks so much for the time, and we'll see you at the ballpark hopefully this week.
Always fun talking to you. Thanks a lot, Matt.
All right, very good. Benjamin Hockman joining us here on the program. Yeah, I read this today, and even with everything going on with the Cardinals, had to get him on to talk through this because I didn't know much about this piece of Cardinals history, which is a lot of fun. So go read the story for yourself. Again, stltoday.com, and you can learn a bit about Joe DeFabio, the first ever draft pick for the Cardinals, but a guy who never got to the big leagues. All right, here's what we've got. So we got about a half hour or so, a little bit less than that. 7:20, that's when we're going to have our next guest on the program. We're going to preview the National Series and talk through a little bit what's going on with the Washington Nationals with Ryan Clary, who covers the team for Washington. Between now and then, going to give you an opportunity to get in here if you would like. We've gotten some comments coming in on the video stream, on the text line as well. We will open up the phone line, 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. This is your opportunity to chime in. How are you feeling? Are you at a spot right now where, you know what, Cardinals are still just a game out of a playoff spot, even with a terrible couple games during the weekend? Or is this something that you feel like this is the precursor of things to come? We can discuss all of that. Don't go anywhere. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
All right, so we've got just a few minutes left here in hour number one. We're here to take your phone calls. This is the open line portion of Sports Open Line, giving you an opportunity to chime in on the Cardinals and where you feel like they are. We'll get some calls in. We'll break for the 7 o'clock news, and then we'll continue to do that after the 7 o'clock news. But let's start with Mike, who has given us a call. Hey, Mike, you are on Sports Open Line.
Hey, how you doing?
Right.
Listen, I'm actually here not to defend the DeWitts, but I will give them credit for a couple decades of really good, fun baseball. But I also have to criticize them because I squarely put this six-game deficit, six and a half, whatever, on ownership because they, and I don't want to say they're cheap because they're paying the money, but because of their stubbornness or whatever you want to call it, they keep running Michaelis and Fetty out there. And you guys went through the record. They easily, it's not, you don't have to use your imagination to see six or seven extra wins had they had something, some semblance of a pitching effort in some of those games. And it's just pathetic that they keep running those guys out there. And all I heard from numerous sources and outlets was how they kept McGreevy in AAA because they're so worried about having no depth behind him. Well, my God, the emergency is right now. Your issue is right now. You have been running out two guys that can't pitch, but you're saving somebody because you need him as an insurance policy. That is the most asinine thing I've ever heard in my life. You figure out someone else to be your emergency pitcher, and you get McGreevy in here, and you let the guy pitch. You eat that contract, and you figure it out. On another note, I don't see anybody on this roster that should be untouchable, except maybe Herrera. I like Donovan, but if you could get a good haul, I don't care. If Lynn or Scott or somebody brings a good haul, I don't care. You've got Weatherholt coming up. You're probably not going to move Arenado because of the contract. I really hate to see him give up on Gorman. He seems to be doing better as well. So what do you do? Because you've got Herrera at DH. You've got Arenado at third. They seem to want to play Donovan at second. So where does that leave Gorman? So I guess my question is there a possibility that they actually address that middle infield situation, and what does that look like in your opinion? And yeah, I'll hang up. Thank you.
You bet, Mike. Appreciate the phone call. So a bunch of stuff that you said right there. First off, I think I was all in on the keeping McGreevy at AAA to help preserve depth thing because you need it to make it through 162 games. I don't think that's the deal anymore. You're enough through the season, and Michaelis and Fetty have performed at a level now where you can match that with just a replacement level player who's going to be fairly easy to go grab, or maybe even somebody you have at AAA right now. So the moves are going to be made here moving forward. I'm pretty sure of that. As far as, look, you asked the million-dollar question. Like, what does this look like moving forward with such a logjam all over the place? And who do they, at some point, they're going to have to move on from players. There is not a scenario where Brendan Donovan, Nolan Arenado, Mason Winn, J.J. Weatherholt, Lars Nootbaar, Alec Burleson can all exist on the same team. Maybe I'm probably missing somebody that's in Nolan Gorman. That's another name that should be in there. Like that, there's just, unless Major League Baseball says you can have a 35-man roster, that there's just not a scenario for that. And even if so, you wouldn't have the playing time. So whether they end up being buyers or sellers at the deadline, I would like to see them start to go through the process of clearing the logjam there and getting on the path of where of knowing who is going to be those core members of the team and knowing who you move on from. Is there a scenario where this team trades Brendan Donovan? I wouldn't love it. I love Brendan Donovan. There's a reason he's going to the All-Star game. But I think I generally agree with Mike on the lack of untouchables on this. I'd probably put Mason Winn in there as well. So my untouchables at this point would be Ivan Herrera and Mason Winn. Those are two guys. And Victor Scott might kind of be in that because he has a very unique skill set that is something that's going to be hard to find. But for the most part, there's not a lot on this team that I would not be willing to move on from. And I think you want to get better, but you also want to clear out some redundancies that currently exist. All right, we will take a break for the 7 o'clock news, and then we'll continue on with the phone calls as we talk all things Cardinals baseball. 314-436-7900 if you want to get in here. It's Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
We are into hour number two of the program, talking pretty much all Cardinals baseball today. The Cardinals are going to open up a series against the Nationals tomorrow, coming up in about 15 minutes or so. We're going to talk with Ryan Clary. He's part of the team at our sister station, Washington, D.C., 106.7 The Fan, and also host of the Locked On Nationals podcast. So a lot going on with the Nationals. We'll talk with him coming up in just a little while. We are continuing to be here to listen to you and get your thoughts on what is happening right now with this Cardinals team after a pretty tough weekend against Chicago. Losing 2 out of 3, that's not the problem. The issue was what it looked like in the 2 losses specifically. Let's grab Richard, who's given us a call. Hey, Richard, you're on Sports Open Line.
Yes, my solution to fixing the Cardinals infield and pitching problems is to trade Nolan Gorman to Oakland for Luis Severino. And that gives us, and bring up McGreevy, that gives us 2 new starting pitchers. And I would also like to add that I'm calling from California, and that I've been a Cardinal fan since 1964.
All right, Richard, appreciate the phone call for sure. With all due respect, I don't love that trade. Luis Severino, now admittedly, Severino's bad season that he's having right now is very much connected to the fact that they are playing their home games in a minor league ballpark in Sacramento. You look at his home road splits this year, it is quite different. He has been terrible at home, good on the road, and again, that has a lot. Let's see, he has a 3.04 ERA away from West Sacramento and a 6.04 ERA in West Sacramento. So that's an argument for Luis Severino. Let me get to my argument against him. He signed a 3-year, $67 million deal. So you bring in Severino, and all of a sudden you're on the hook for the final 2 years of that $67 million contract, unless he was to opt out after the 2026 season. And you're doing that for you're giving away a guy in Nolan Gorman who is currently making less than $1 million, has not yet hit his first year of arbitration, and who you have under contract control through 2029. I'm not completely adverse to moving on from Nolan Gorman, but based off what we've seen lately, I'm a little bit more encouraged with what he has been able to do, and I'm not convinced that Severino's contract is something that you want to add, and I am also not convinced that Gorman is the guy you want to move on from. Now, I realize I say all that to say this. Gorman's in a really good stretch right now, very streaky player. He can fall into a not-so-good stretch as well. Speaking of potential trades, Sam sends in a message on the he is watching on YouTube, says, what do you think about the Cardinals trading for Spencer Strider of the Braves? Just a thought. I like that more because I think Spencer Strider is an incredible player, and he is going to continue to be that. He's coming back from injury, so it's taking a little bit. At the same time, that's a big contract. That's a really big contract. I don't think the Braves want to move on from him. That's probably the most important thing. I don't see why they would do that. They've got this guy locked in through 2029. He's not eligible for free agency until 2030, signed the 6-year, $75 million contract. If there was a scenario where you could bring in a Spencer Strider, yeah, I'll jump in on that. I don't think it's something that is likely to happen, because even as the Braves have struggled this year, even with them struggling, they are still, I think, what they would view in as a championship window. And they, even if it doesn't happen for them this year, even making the postseason, they're not going to move on from core members of their team like Strider. And you just worked with Strider going through an injury and getting him back. You want to get the best of him and that contract that you signed him to. Nick sends in a message, says, Matt, the Cardinals have said they won't go out and spend in free agency. So how do they fix pitching with not having a star on the team? Just cross your fingers and hope someone emerges. Nick, with all due respect, I think what you've heard to prompt you to send that message is taken a little bit out of context, because the Cardinals are not spending right now. I don't know if the Cardinals are going to spend going into next season. It depends on where they think they're at, and it may depend on what happens this year. If this team goes on a great run and looks good in the final 2 months of the season and gets into the postseason, they may feel like their contending window is opening and they would make some more significant moves this offseason. Maybe that doesn't happen. I don't know. But what I do know is, while they took a step back from payroll this year to be able to get their draft and develop business in order, get that store in order, they've never said that they're not eventually going to go back to spending large money. And I believe that by the Cardinals getting player development back humming along, that is going to give them the opportunity to make more impactful signings in free agency. I've said this a million times. I know some people listening have heard me say this, and you know exactly where I'm going, and I'm sorry that I've repeated this over and over and over. But to me, the poster children, and this is nothing against either guy, I like each of these guys, what they did for the team, who they are as individuals, but it's what they represent. The poster children for what has gone wrong with the St. Louis Cardinals organization are Kyle Gibson and Lance Lynn. Because you were stuck going and spending $10, $11, $12 million for a 3-starter and a 4-starter, or a 4-starter and a 5-starter, or 2 number 4 starters, like however you want to view them. You went and spent that money on those guys. And they made your team better in the sense that they helped you contend to win games, but they did not make your team better in terms of being a playoff club and being a club that on paper looks like they could make a deep playoff run. So start developing your number 4 starter. And by the way, like we all like lift Michael McGreevy up, and this is not me taking a shot at McGreevy. we all lift Michael McGreevy up as being a savior. He kind of projects out as a 3 or a 4 starter, doesn't get a whole lot of strikeouts, pitches to a lot of contact. He's going to get ground balls. He's going to have some really bad days when he's got some bad batted ball luck. Really struggled last night. I'm excited about Michael McGreevy, don't get me wrong, but let's not lift him up that he's going to get here, he's going to propel this team to the playoffs, and then he's going to be your game one starter. That's not who Michael McGreevy is. Is Michael McGreevy better than what Eric Fetty and Miles Michaelis are giving you right now? Yes, he is. So really, that's all that matters for our conversation right now. But the organization needs to produce the Michael McGreevys of the world who can be at the back end of the rotation, and then you take that hypothetical money that you would spend on a Lance Lynn and a Kyle Gibson, you combine that money together, and you go get an all-star player because you're going to go pay $25 million or $30 million for a guy. And I get the sense, based off some comments that John Mozeliak has made recently, that Cardinals ownership is well aware of where the industry is at right now and the type of money it's going to take to be able to bring in truly impact players. So it's up to the organization to go out and create the system where you are developing a lot of players on your major league roster, but at the same time, you are willing to spend legitimate money to bring in the pieces that help fill up the roster. And I think that's the direction that this team is going. I can't sit here and make a prediction on if it's going to be 2026 or 2027 of when that happens, but I can remember having personal conversations. When they had that press conference last year where they made the big announcement, John Mozeliak was going to have one more year, Heim Bloom was going to take over, I had conversations with people in the organization that were saying part of this thinking is that they are going to be ready to jump back in once this player development thing is back to where it needs to be. And I think it's going to get there under Heim Bloom. We'll take more of your phone calls, text calls, all that sort of stuff. We're not done with that, but we are going to get to a guest. Ryan Clary is going to join us to talk all things Nationals baseball. He's with us next. Don't go anywhere. It's Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
The Chris and Amy Show, weekdays starting at 9 on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Cardinals are off today. They get back at tomorrow night as they are going to welcome in the Washington Nationals to Busch Stadium. Well, we, of course, will have the broadcast for you right here on KMOX. A lot going on with the Washington Nationals going into the series, and to talk through that a little bit, very happy to bring on Ryan Clary. He's part of the team at our sister station, 106.7 The Fan in Washington, D.C., and he's also the host of the Locked On Nationals podcast. You follow him on Twitter at RyanClary11. Ryan, thanks for taking some time with us today. How are you?
Of course, I'm doing well. You know, it's been a busy few hours here in D.C., really the last day or so, but yeah, it's been crazy.
What was your level of surprise that they made the decision to move on from manager Dave Martinez along with general manager Mike Rizzo, all in one big move yesterday?
So as far as Davey Martinez goes, I was not surprised by that. I think a lot of Nationals fans kind of knew that he was a dead man walking at this point, because the thing with Davey Martinez, about a month ago, he called out the players and, you know, he was asked about whether if the coaching staff were to blame for the 12-game losing streak. And he said, no, we can't play for the players and they have to play better. It's paraphrasing it. So I think at that moment, that's when fans knew he's going to be gone. We all knew that he was not going to be the long-term answer anymore. So that wasn't surprising. Now, Mike Rizzo, on the other hand, Mike Rizzo has been here since 2006. The move and the timing of that move was pretty stunning to this team, because no one really anticipated that he would be fired 1 week before you pick number one overall in the MLB draft. And really, let alone a lot of people didn't really expect the Lerner family, the owners here in town, to move off of him, because he does have a long track record of success. But I'm sure we'll get into it. But if you kind of look deeper into it with Mike Rizzo, there are some real things that you can kind of say, like, yeah, he should have been better, and he definitely could have been better. So I do think people were surprised with Mike Rizzo. But as far as Davey goes, people weren't that surprised we all knew that it was coming.
All right, so I'm not super familiar with how much like autonomy Rizzo gives his staff there in Washington. Getting ready for the number one pick, was this something that Mike Rizzo was going to be the guy really making that decision, or is he somebody who really defers to his, you know, scouting director and allows somebody else to kind of take the lead on that pick? Meaning, could things really change here now that somebody else is going to be in that spot?
I don't believe anything will change because the Nationals a few years ago, just about 2 years ago, they actually plucked Brad Ciolek, who ran the draft for the Baltimore Orioles, and he's kind of been the guy who has run the draft for the team, really just the past season. And as far as I know, I think he is the guy running the draft for this season as well. And we saw them actually kind of have a new way of things. Mike Rizzo in the past, he has run the draft. He's always taken the best player available. He's never kind of cut those deals for guys inside the top 10. And lo and behold, the first draft that Brad Ciolek runs last year, he actually cut a deal with someone at number 10. They took a lesser value there than they would have really done in years past. So I don't really think it really changes things as far as the MLB draft goes. And you know, you watch baseball at this point. They've got the number one pick. I'm sure they're still probably juggling some things. But people inside that building, they probably know who they're going to select right now with that number one overall pick. So I don't really think it changes all too much. And I think this Nationals team, they're going to take the best player available.
There's five or six guys that could go three or four guys that could go number one, and then all of a sudden there's five or six guys that could maybe be available when the Cardinals pick it with the number five spot. So who the Nationals pick number one does have an impact on the Cardinals potentially. Is there some guys who could be picked number one or could potentially fall all the way to number five? Do you have a sense? Do you have a feeling of who it's going to be for the Nationals?
Yeah, I think it's going to be Ethan Holliday. I mean, you guys are very familiar with the Holliday family there in St. Louis. I think Ethan Holliday is the tip-top player in this draft. Like, if you talk about ceilings, he has that 30 home run potential in him. He could stick over at shortstop, likely goes over to third base, or really, who knows? He's in high school at this point. But I think it's going to be Ethan Holliday, and I think yesterday it just kind of made it more sure of myself that they are going to take the potential best player in this draft. Like, yeah, there's a lot of risk taking a prep high school bat, but at this point, they're changing things up. They're going in on this rebuild yet again. You got to go and try and get the best player available. You can't pick inside the top 10 in next year's draft as far as the new MLB lottery rules go. So this is your one chance to really get in here and take that best player available. And I think it's Ethan Holliday at this point, and I think that should be the pick for this Nationals team.
Martinez led this team to a World Series not that long ago. I know you're judged by what's going on in the moment, and you made the great point about the comments they made a month ago or so, but are you at all surprised that they didn't find a way to honor him more in him walking out the door, if that makes sense?
Yeah, no, it definitely makes sense. And listen, I think Davey Martinez, unless he lands somewhere else, I think next year is kind of the time, maybe next year, the next few seasons, you have him come in and you retire the number four jersey. Because again, this guy is going to be remembered as the guy who won us a World Series. We have not seen a World Series title since the 1920s with the Senators. I mean, this town was just starving for a World Series title, and he was the guy who helped deliver it here. So, I mean, is it a little surprising the way that they did it after getting swept by the Red Sox? I mean, maybe the timing was a little bit weird because, again, they lost 12 straight games. They almost got swept in a four-game series against the Rockies at home, and they didn't even make that decision then. So, I mean, it's a business decision at the end of the day. I think Davey Martinez lost the clubhouse a little bit. There were some anonymous reports out there from players saying that they were pissed about his comments just made a few weeks ago. And this team, really, since then, they've completely fallen apart. So I think as far as your young talent goes, you have to put those guys first. And if Davey Martinez lost guys like James Wood and Mackenzie Gore and C.J. Abrams, your really big young core here in town, then you got to move off him. And so I think they made the right decision overall.
We're talking with Ryan Clary from 106.7 The Fan and also the Locked On Nationals podcast. It's been announced that a former Cardinal in Miguel Cairo is going to take over in the interim. This is the second time he's done this in his career. He was the interim manager for the White Sox after Tony La Russa stepped away. So another kind of Cardinal connection right there. Sometimes we see these bumps when interim managers take over. What's your expectation? Is Cairo a guy who the players are going to like playing for?
You know, I think as far as like all the interactions that I've had with Miguel Cairo and really everyone on that coaching staff, like the players love them. And the players did love Davey Martinez. And I think Cairo is kind of goes hand in hand with Davey in that aspect. I mean, he's a nice guy. He's played the game before, being a former player. He's been in that interim manager role there, taking over for Tony La Russa back in, 2021 at that point. Like, he's been around the game. He knows it. I don't think people are expecting this team to do a complete 180. I don't think Miguel Cairo is going to be the long answer. But his job at this point is to keep these young guys and keep this team in check and overall just play better baseball and make sure that these guys take the steps up. And again, we've talked a lot about the young core here in town. Those are the guys that you really have to focus on because this season is a lost cause at this point. You've got the second worst record in the National League. We're not expecting a 2011 Cardinals run where they went on a crazy ride in the second half there. No one's expecting that at this point. So keep the guys in check. Try to win some games when you can and beat the teams that you should, and I think he'll be just fine.
This downturn isn't new this year. When do you see the competitive window starting to reopen once again for the Nationals?
You know, I think the competitive window will probably take another two seasons. I mean, it really kind of depends what you do with that number one overall pick this Sunday night. Like, if you take Ethan Holliday and this guy is going to be a superstar, then I think that that's going to help you a lot. You've also got another stud blue chip prospect like a Travis Acora. You guys may not have heard too much about him, but this guy has put up insane video game like numbers, kind of similar to what Paul Skeens did. He's down in Double A at this point. We still don't really know when exactly he'll make that push to the major leagues, but he just got promoted. And the Nationals, again, they've got to hit on their draft picks. That was kind of the downfall of Mike Rizzo. And over the years, he simply has not been able to draft and develop. And if they can do that, even if it's just a few guys, spend nicely in free agency and get a few key veteran pieces, I think this team could potentially win in 2027.
Talked about the legacy of Dave Martinez. Is the legacy of Mike Rizzo somewhat the same, or is it different for him?
Oh, I think Mike Rizzo's legacy here, I mean, he is Nationals baseball, quite literally. I mean, Mike Rizzo has been here since 2006. The inaugural season was 2005. And really, Mike Rizzo gets all the credit for the 2010s. I mean, he stood on the table to make that Max Scherzer deal back in 2015. Everyone called him crazy. They said he was nuts for it. Lo and behold, a couple Cy Youngs later, a World Series championship later, a Game 7 start in the World Series to ultimately help this team win it. I mean, he is a legend here in D.C. People are going to remember him as such, but still, again, the results these past few seasons, they have not been enough. I don't think people are going to remember him for that. I think they're going to remember him for the incredible 2010s run that this team had, really building a winning culture within this building that really we did not have here in D.C. We had the Washington Capitals. You had the Washington Redskins at the time. They were awful. The Wizards have been awful forever. And so the Nationals were kind of like our crown jewel here in town where you could say this team's going to win. They've got Bryce Harper. They've got all this young talent in that really decade span where you were winning consistently. He's going to have a huge legacy here. He's going to be recognized as one of the greats to really just be here in D.C. sports, and he's going to be a D.C. sports Hall of Famer, and he deserves it.
For Nationals fans, is there more excitement about this representing a new era of this team as things have been bad lately, or has there been more sadness or, you know, people lamenting the fact that two larger-than-life figures in the history of this organization are no longer part of it?
You know, I think they're kind of spinning two plates at once. Like, I think we were all recognizing that this is the end of the World Series kind of run. I mean, we've been holding on to that forever. It's been a bad 6 years ever since they won the World Series. But on the other hand, they are excited for it because we've heard the same messages. I mean, again, you guys in St., you may not know this, but Davey Martinez every day, the Nationals lose 6-2, and he's like, we just have to go 1-0 every day. When you hear that 5 years in a row, when this is one of the worst teams in all of baseball, you're just like, oh my gosh, like this message is not getting to the players. It's certainly not getting to the fan base. So, and even then with Mike Rizzo, like he kind of says the same things. Like he's like, well, we're going to be better next year. Like we're going to be better next year. Once you say that year after year after year, and you fall short every single season, it starts to wear on you a little bit. And I think of the fan base, they're ready for a new beginning, and I think they should be. Like, again, this is a big time for the Nationals. You're in the middle of this rebuild, and you've got some young talent. You've got a great young star with James Wood here in town. You're going to have to open up a window of possibilities here, and you have to start seeing results from guys who simply have not been getting it done, like Mike Rizzo and Davey Martinez. So they made a decision, and I think they made the right one.
So it's going to be somebody else, the trade deadline. We would assume that there's going to be some selling off for the Nationals. Which are there a few key players that you feel like are going to maybe be able to help this team in the future if they're able to sell them off this year?
Well, as far as like veteran pieces for the Nationals to sell off, is that where you're at?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so right now I look at closer Kyle Finnegan. He was an all-star last season. He's been great so far this season. I certainly expect them to sell him off at this year's deadline because, again, mid-30s, is he really going to be a part of this future? Probably not. And honestly, his value is never going to be as high as what it is right now. I think he's really good. I think his numbers are a lot better than what his stuff is actually. So I think Kyle Finnegan is certainly someone who will be moved off the deadline. Then I also look at first baseman Nathaniel Lowe. The Nationals made a really great trade this offseason for him. They traded Robert Garcia. I mean, he's good with the Rangers, but still, I'll take an everyday first baseman who's got a little pop, is fine off defensively also. I'll take that trade any day, but I could also see them kind of move him off him. And if you can get some value for him, then certainly if that helps this team win now, and if it helps this team win more in the future, I think you have to get that done. So I'm looking at Kyle Finnegan and Nathaniel Lowe.
Great stuff from Ryan Clary. He's part of the team at our sister station in our nation's capital, 106.7 The Fan. He is also the host of the Locked On Nationals podcast. You can find all of his details on social media, on Twitter, at RyanClary11. Ryan, thanks for taking the time. Really appreciate this, and hopefully we can catch up again down the line.
Of course. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Very good. That's Ryan Clary joining us, talking a little bit through the Washington Nationals, who the Cardinals are going to meet up against for a three-game series that will begin tomorrow. Of course, we'll have the broadcast for you right here on KMOX. 6:45 first pitch, meaning our coverage will begin at 5:50. Really, our coverage will begin with Redbird Rush Hour at 5 o'clock, and then I'll jump in. I'll continue on with pregame at 5:50 tomorrow. The pitching matchup in tomorrow's game, Andre Pallante is going to go for the Cardinals, and for the Washington Nationals tomorrow, they're going to go with Jake Irvin. Irvin, a right-hander who comes in with a pretty good 7-3 record, but a 4.71 ERA. All right, we will jump back into your thoughts on the Cardinals. Again, if you want to get in here, the opportunity to do so by calling, texting, tweeting, or leaving a message in the video chat. For those of you who are watching on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, if you call or text, the phone number 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. Tweet at me, at Matt Pauley on air, MattPauley on air, or like I mentioned, just leave the chat there in the video chat, and we will definitely get to more messages. Have a bunch that have come in that we not gone to yet, so we'll continue on with that in just a moment here on KMOX.
Cards manager Ollie Marble joins the Gas House Gang every Tuesday at noon. Sponsored by Siteman Cancer Center on the voice of the Cardinals, 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Back at it on a Graybar Sports Open Line here on KMOX. We are taking you until 8 o'clock tonight. Again, if you want to chime in, you can do so, 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. That's how you call or text. Tweet at me, at Matt Pauley on air, or you can leave a message in the video chat. I always say this. I try. I'm not always effective at it. I try not to tell you or anybody else how to be a fan. That's your thing. And if you want to make decisions, go to in terms of how you're a fan, don't want to spend money, don't want to go, do like whatever. That's your right. And I try my darndest. I'm not always successful. Try my darndest not to tell you how to be a fan. That being said, here I go, right? I was a little frustrated with something. Because Cardinals, for all the negative talk, and the negative talk is rightly deserved. In their two losses to the Cubs, they gave up 22 runs. They've been shut out four times in their last six games, seven games, whatever the exact number is. So everything that we're saying about this team right now and the struggles that they are currently dealing with, they are all valid. I'm not running away from any of this. But there is the time to take a step back and still look at where this team is at. And I'm going to pull this card. I'm going to pull this card. If you would have been asked when the season got started if you would be content going into the matchup on July 8th that the Cardinals are 500 and are one game out of the playoff spot, who is saying, no, that's not good enough? Now, there's going to be some people who would say, no, they're not. That's not good enough because they're going to have expectations that the team contends for a championship every single season. I would argue that those expectations are a bit extreme. But if that's your reason for saying that, okay, I will defer to you on that one. But for the most part, the expectations going into this season were not very high, and they have exceeded those expectations. And as they have exceeded those expectations, and the last week, week and a half, 2 weeks, notwithstanding, they have, for the most part, played a very entertaining brand of baseball. And as that was happening, as this team continued to accumulate wins, as this team did cut down the deficit in the Central, as this team was sitting in a wild card spot, all of a sudden those loud noises that we heard from people, fire Mo, fire Ollie, I'm never going to spend a dollar on this team, I'm never walking into Busch Stadium, as long as those people are around, those voices started to just get a little quieter. They weren't gone. They weren't. But they started to get a little quieter. Well, then the Cardinals have a bad week. Very bad week. They get shut out in three straight games by the Pittsburgh Pirates. And then they, like I said, they go into Chicago. And they lose two out of three. And in the two losses, they just get run absolutely off the field. Guess what's starting to pop up again? All those people who want to puff out their chest and tell you how proud they are of the fact that they're not going to walk into Busch Stadium. And all the people who want to tell you, see, I'm so glad that I haven't spent a dollar on this team this year. Again, this is where I attempt not to tell fans how to be fans. But as someone who loves the game of baseball, and I'm guessing the vast majority of people that I'm speaking to right now also love the game of baseball, it saddens me a little bit that a Cardinals team, again, the last week or so notwithstanding, a team that's been fun to watch, a team that plays hard. And I was going back and forth with somebody on social media the other day, and I made the point that, you know what, this is a team that plays hard. And they made the comment to me, you know what, I'm not going to go spend money on a team because they do the required minimum of playing hard. Okay, yeah, that's fine. Professional, and I gave it to City SC a little bit on social media this weekend because Klaus goes out and says, hey, if we would have played the first half the way we played the second half, we might have won that game. Well, then do it. Play the first game. You know, give the effort. That is the required minimum. Give the flipping effort. So I understand that thought. I understand that thought 100%. But still, the style of baseball that this team plays is something that, for the most part, has been incredibly entertaining. And these guys are playing hard. These guys are working hard. These guys are doing everything that they can be asked to do. And the vast majority of the season has been an incredibly entertaining team. Recently, not entertaining. It hasn't been. Final two games of the Cubs home series, not great. Cleveland series was good. Pirates series, bad. Cubs series, not great. We can go back a little bit further. There's been some other issues, you know, at times during the year. But I hate it. I got to be honest. I hate the fact that there's a group of people that anytime things start to go poorly for this team, they want to yell and shout that they're so proud of themselves that they're not supporting this team, where my response to them is, if you love baseball, go support this team. Yeah, are there going to be some moments that are clunkers? Are there going to be periods of time that it doesn't look good? Yeah, there are. young team, not the most talented team in the world. Nobody has ever said that they are. But I've got, well, we can revisit this. We will revisit it. It's not a we can revisit it. It is a we will revisit it. I'm not convinced that this team's going to get back into the division race. The Cubs are better than the Cardinals. I hate the fact that those words just came out of my mouth, but the Cubs are better than the Cardinals. On paper, they are a better team. Maybe something changes. Maybe the Cubs fall back and don't play to their talent. That can happen. The better team. You know, you look at the teams that are around the Cardinals in the wild card race. Like that's the scary thing about this, because here's on paper, the San Francisco Giants are a better team than the Cardinals. On paper, the San Diego Padres are a better team than the Cardinals. At times, the Cardinals have had a better record than those teams, so the Cardinals are going to have to overachieve, and those teams are going to have to underachieve a little bit for the Cardinals to catch them. But I also don't think that's impossible. I think every year we see teams overachieve and underachieve. The Atlanta Braves are an incredibly talented team. They've got some injuries. They've got some other things going on. There are some reasons for what's happening with them this year. But my God, they're 11. The Atlanta Braves are 11 games under 500. 11 games under 500. And I hope nobody in Atlanta is calling for Brian Snitker to lose his job. Maybe they are. I'm not doing post game in Atlanta. But the Braves are a very, very talented team that for a multitude of reasons are having a bad season. The Arizona Diamondbacks are a very talented team that for a number of reasons are having a not so great season. So it happens where teams underachieve, teams overachieve, things like that. So I'm still of the belief, even with what just happened, I'm still of the belief that this team is certainly worth giving some of your support to if you enjoy watching good baseball. I'm not telling you it was good baseball over the last week or so. It wasn't. We'll take one more break. We'll come back. We can still get some comments in from you. I promise I'll read some of these texts and some other messages that have come in. We've got time for some phone calls as well. 314-436-7900. Wrapping up a Graybar Sports Open Line next on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Just a few minutes left here on this edition of the program. Got a text message. Says, been a Cardinals fan since 1967 through the thick and thin. But if Oliver Marmol is still the manager after the All-Star break, I'm out. Well, go. I can save you some time. You can jump out now, because Oliver Marmol will indeed be the manager of the Cardinals after the All-Star break. And for a team, again, bad week, really bad week, for a team that has overachieved more than most teams in baseball this year, it's pretty remarkable to me that the Oliver Marmol haters to begin the season thought that this was going to be a 72-win season. They are on pace for an above 500 season, yet nobody, God forbid, anybody gives any bit of credit to Oliver Marmol. So to the texter, I'm telling you, Oliver Marmol is going to be the manager at least till the end of this season. So if you are waiting to the All-Star break to see if you're going to hop in or hop out or anything, I can tell you right now, go ahead and hop out, because if that's what you truly believe, well, that's how it's going to go down. Let's talk to Craig, who's giving us a call. Hey, Craig, you are on Sports Open Line.
Thank you. You know, the biggest problem I see with this team, I haven't heard anybody talk about. You know, the pitching staff not included, because they're still pitching pretty much on their every five-day schedule. But the rest of this team with the crazy schedule of play every team in Major League Baseball, with all the doubleheaders that they've already played, plus the long stretches with no days off, these guys are just gassed. They're out of gas, which we were worried about with the young players towards the end of the season, but this schedule has just gassed them already. I'm curious to see when they come out of the All-Star break, if we don't see a little bit of that pop again after they get a few days rest. But I've not heard anybody contribute their downfall to just being totally out of gas.
Yeah, Craig, I appreciate the phone call. It's a really good point. We've talked about it a little bit. I don't think it's an I think there's a difference between excuses and reasons. But I also don't like this is the highest level of baseball. The Cardinals, the amount of doubleheaders they've already played this year is insane, and Has it taken something out of this team? Absolutely. Having the month that they just had with so few off days, and then some of those days turning, you know, even days where you're rained out, you're at the ballpark all day working, and then all of a sudden you're not playing that day, but you've still put your work in, and then you got to play two games the next day. Yeah, I do think this team is gassed. I think this team is a lot more banged up than people are giving them credit for. A lot more banged up. I think there are a lot of dudes that are dealing with stuff, and they are gutting it out on an every single night basis. That being said, every team has to deal with the 162-game schedule. It looks different for every single team in the way it goes down. So I don't like talking about it that much personally, because I think it sounds like I'm creating a level of excuse, even though I think to what you said is correct. I think it's more of a reason than an excuse. But you're paid to be a ball player. You're paid to play 162 games. And however the schedule works out and however the games are divvied up and whatever Mother Nature decides she wants to give to you, you got to find a way to handle it. I do think that coming, look, they've got the off day today. They had an off day on Thursday. They'll play six games here at home, and then they'll get 4 days off for the All-Star break. What it looks like on the other side of that is something that is worth taking a look at. Text message from Teresa. Actually, you know what? We won't read that one. I think that one. We will read this, though, from Teresa. Earlier said, just because the Cardinals are going to be playing lesser teams for a short while doesn't mean that those excuses that the changes need to be made. Yeah, so I think that was an alluding to Eric Fetty specifically and Miles Michaelis. And I would say that there are changes that do need to be made, and I think that they are in the process of being made. We have about a minute left in the show. Tom has just given us a call. Tom, I hate to do that. I've got just a few seconds for you, but you're on Sports Open Line.
Real quickly, you know, if it's, here's the problem with Mo is he won't admit his mistakes. If he got rid of Fetty and Michaelis, he's not out $20 million. He's already out that $20 million. He's only going to be out the couple hundred thousand it's going to cost to bring these kids up here. So that's the way he's got to look at it. It's going to cost him a couple hundred thousand, not the $20 million. You can't chase bad money.
Yeah,
thank
Tom,
you for letting me tuck in.
You bet. Thank you for the call. I wouldn't move on from Fetty just because I think there's still some upside there. I would get him to the bullpen, let him work on some things, see if there's a chance that you can get him back to where he was previously. There was a reason that he was desired at the deadline last year. So I'm not walking away from Eric Fetty, even if I'm taking him out of the rotation. Miles Michaelis just kind of at this point is what he is. And can you do better? I think you can. I think you can. And I know that Eric Fetty's not going to make his next start. That's been preordained pretty much. What's going to be interesting is what they do with Miles Michaelis moving forward. Thanks for being tuned in. We'll talk to you again coming up tomorrow here on KMOX.